Okay. 18. Okay, good morning, everybody. We're holding in Perek Yud Ches of the Netzach, Israel. And we are continuing here. This is with his discussion of Malchus Edom, of the kingdom of Esav, of Edom, and their relationship to the Jewish people. If you remember, if you recall, the fundamental question which he's been dealing with here in this section is, given the remarkable portrayal of the role of the Jewish people in the world, which has led to the notion of Netzach Yisrael, of an eternal Jewish people, the idea that we spoke about, that the Maral taught about, that no matter what happens, you can count on always having the Jewish people there, that Hashem's complete investment in the world is contingent on the success of the Bnei Yisrael as the focal point, as the mainstay. So he just says, okay, I just want one little question, which is, why is it that the Jewish people have so much suffering in this world? If the whole world is about the Bnei Yisrael, so then, you know, what gives? And we've been talking about it from a couple of he's been speaking about it in a few of the last parakim, a few of the last chapters, with a major focus on the idea that there's this olam hazeh olam haba divide, and that the ikar, that the mainstay, when Yaakov and Esav had their argument, as we learned, Yaakov, they were merivim al nachlas shnei olamos, they were arguing about two worlds. Yaakov took as his main portion the Olam Haba, Esav took as his main portion the Olam Hazeh, and therefore it is not to be found as an overwhelming surprise, Esav's success in this world versus Yaakov Avinu's lack of success in this world, because this really isn't so much where it's at for us, for Yaakov, for the Bnei Yisrael. And I'm making it very, very short, and we're cutting out a lot of it, but Esav's control on the other end of this world is really phenomenal, is to be seen as outstanding. And we spoke last time about how one can't even anticipate or see the downfall. When Daniel had his dreams, he saw all the malchios, all the kingdoms rise and fall, but when it came to Esav, he saw its rise and he didn't see its fall. And there's this idea, and as was explained in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which he brought last time, as he pointed out, Rabbi Eliezer, who was just there at the beginning of Malchus Edom, that this kingdom, you know, who knows when it's going to come down. And it takes something godly in order to be able to bring it down. And last week we spent time on that fascinating, fascinating piece of the Maral, where he spoke about the idea that Yaakov's prayer, so that Esav wouldn't overwhelm the world while he had it, was for the separation of powers. That Esav would not be able to have complete control of the House, the Senate, and the White House at the same time, otherwise they would go completely nuts. Right? So we make it that they're going to be warring with each other and fighting with each other, parliamentary issues, and so on and so forth. The blessing of democracy to somehow contain the power from going overboard. That was what we learned last time in the Maral. Now the Maral is going to focus today, and this really, in a certain sense, is the last of this series of prakim, which are directly about the Yaakov and Esav divide. He's going to focus today on another maimar, which has echoes of what we talked about last time, but certainly goes beyond. The Gemara in Psachim, it's a Gemara in Psachim on Daf Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis. The Gemara says as follows. And he sent another message. This is in a series of memras, so to speak, which were between Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And he said, "Tell me." And he sent him the following. Excuse me. Gimel Meis v'shishim v'chamisha shvakim berchrach gadol shel Raimi. There are 365 shvakims, 365 marketplaces. In the Krach Gadol of Raimi, in the big city of Rome, and in each one there were shloish meis v'shishim v'chamisha biranias. Each one had 365 biranias, towers, right, skyscrapers. V'chol biranis u'biranis hayu bay shloish meis v'shishim v'chamisha malos. Each one had 365 levels, V'chol malo malo hayubai, and on each level there was kidei lozon es kol olam kulei. There was enough there in order to be able to sustain the whole world. So that's what he sent him. He said Rome had it. Right? We would say they had it made in the shade, except, right, the emphasis here is on 365. And as we learned last year, what was the idea? Was because the Malchus of Edom is like the sun. They're both controllers, so to speak, of the world, the natural world. And therefore, Esav's function and ability is always defined, often defined, I should say, when it's functioning, in terms of 365. Just like we said last time, when the Gemara spoke about that separation of powers, it was between the 300 kings, which we explained the three there, versus the 365 dukes, the 365 ministers, because the kings are the, you know, the titular heads, right? The Queen of England, whereas the dukes are the Prime Minister of England. They're the ones who are actually functioning. And function is defined in terms of the 365, the range of the year. That's why we find this magic number. And we find this magic number here on three levels, right? On the level of the marketplaces, the streets, the buildings within the streets, and the levels within the buildings, the floors within the buildings. And each one has within it to sustain the whole world. It's describing this tremendous, tremendous prosperity, blessing that they have. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi l'Rebbe. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said to Rebbe, and some say the other way around, Hani Laman. So tell me, who gets all this stuff? Right? You're describing all this prosperity, all this wealth, all this food, all this sustenance. Who gets it? And he said, Loch to you, ulechavrach, and to your friends, ulechavrusach. Some have the girsa, as the Maral quotes it, is ulechavrachavrach. Right? To you and to your friends and to your friends' friends. Right? So that's how far it goes. Rashi on Lechavrusach, he says Lechavre Chaver. Rashi says that as the translation of the phrase, to the friends of your friends. To your broader circle. That's who they are going to. Shenemar. And he doesn't just say this out of a hat, he brings a pasuk in Yeshayo, which says Sachra Vetnena Kedesh Lashem. I will their schayra, right? Their merchandise, and I will give it sanctified to Hashem. Le'yotzer v'le'yechasein, it will not be able to be stored in any level of storage, any level of vault. Ki liyoshvim l'fnei Hashem yeh. Instead, it will go to the yoshvim l'fnei Hashem, to those who sit before Hashem. In other words, they have all of this stuff, but they won't be able to keep it. Ultimately, they're going to give it over. And the Gemara says, "Mai ki liyeshu mufnei Hashem." What does it mean to those who sit before Hashem? Amar Rabbi Lazar, the hamakir mekayim chaveray biyeshiva. The person who knows where his friend sits in the yeshiva. In other words, he spends so much time there, he knows exactly where everybody sits. Ika diami, Amar Rabbi Lazar, the hamakabel pnei chaveray biyeshiva. Person who greets properly the face of his friend in the yeshiva. Okay, and the Gemara goes on to speak about it. The learning Torah gets into other details, but what we read from the Gemara is the part that we are going to be focusing on. This tremendous material prosperity of Esav and Olam Hazeh, but in the end he comes back and he says, "Who will it go to? Ultimately, it will go to the Bnei Yisrael. Ki liyoshim ufnei Hashem yitnua. Ultimately, it won't be theirs. Ultimately, it will turn to become the property of the Bnei Yisrael." So, What's the meaning of this Gemara? What's the meaning of this Gemara in its various stages? So we're going to start a little bit with what the Maral says, and this is going to be one of those Marals where we're going to need to embellish it a little bit from some other sources to complement what the Maral is saying. The Maral's a little bit more on the cryptic side here in this parak, a little bit more on the cryptic side. The three levels that it describes here, right, all within the 365 of the Olam Hazeh, describes sort of a graduated process from the street to the building to the heights of the building to the three levels of the building, to the 365 levels of the building. The way we see the world, and we've discussed this at other times in the Maral, is we speak about the world as being composed, and this characterization, by the way, far precedes the Maral. You find it very, very much in the Rishonim. Ibn Ezra writes about it a lot, and therefore the Ramban as well. And they write about an olam ha'elyon, an olam ha'emtsoy, and an olam ha'tachtoy. There's an upper world, there's a middle world, and there's a lower world. The olam ha'elyon is, so to speak, the world where HaKadosh Baruch Hu resides. The olam ha'emtsoy is going to be the world of the stars and the signs of the world. The stuff around this earth that, so to speak, as it turns, the world turns. That all the fate of the world is, so to speak, developed in those stars. We believe, of course, not limited specifically to those stars. That's the idea that the Bnei Yisrael are above the stars, but in a conventional format. Today it is sunny, it is the beginning of the end of spring, the beginning of summer, because of all of that Olam HaEmtzoi stuff, right? The way it works, the way all of those planets line up. So there's the Olam HaEmtzoi, and then there's the Olam HaTachton, there's the world down here. And when we describe the presence of these places filled with mezonos, filled with sustenance, from the world above down to the world below, what that implies is that the mezonos which we have, the mezonos which Esav has, is somehow very, very much part of this shefa, part of this flow that comes from above. You know, in this very same neighborhood in Maseches Pesachim, the Gemara discusses what we call the Halel HaGadol, the Great Halel. The Great Halel is that one perek, which we say in Psukei DeZimra, tucked into the middle of Psukei DeZimra on Shabbos morning. In fact, where it has its most prominent place, arguably, is on the night of the Seder, where we say it as the entire Psukei DeZimra. In other words, after we finish saying Halel, with, you know, when we say Yishtabach, after we say the Halel, after the meal, after the Afikoman and the benching, we say Halel, we say, most of us say half of Yishtabach, half of Yehalelucha, you know, without the bracha, and then we go on to say Halel HaGadol, this 26 lines of Hayru Lashem Kitoiv Kilo Olam Chazdai, 26 lines ending Kilo Olam Chazdai, and then we say Nishmas Yishtabach. So there, that Halel is the entire, so to speak, Psukei DeZimra. The Gemara asks, so why do we call it Halel HaGadol? Why do we call it the Great Halel? And the Gemara says the reason why we call it the Great Halel is because it says the following: Noisein lechem l'chol basar. It ends Noisein lechem l'chol basar kilo elam chazdai. Haydu l'kel Hashemayim kilo elam chazdai. Hashem gives the bread to all flesh. His kindness is forever. Give praise to the kel Hashemayim, to the God of the heavens kilo elam chazdai, because His kindness is forever. Says the Gemara. So what do you see? Hashem sits in Shmei Shemayim, in the uppermost heavens. And he goes and he feeds and he sustains all of his creations, even mi be'e kinim vat karnei chagovim, right? From the antennae of grasshoppers to the eggs of lice. In other words, to the most, or mi karnei re'emim ad be'e chagovim, from different be'e kinim, different from the biggest brias to the small brias. Hashem sustains everything from way up there in the heavens. We see it as all being part of that idea of a flow from the heavens of Mezonos. And therefore, when we describe here the physical prosperity of Zonas Kol Olam Kulay, of Hashem that has in it enough to sustain the whole world, we also draw these lines of connection between what's down here and what's up there. The Olam HaTachtayim, the Olam HaEmtzoy, the Olam HaElyon, the world below, the middle world, the world above. It's all coming in a flow from Hashem. And we've talked about this many times. It's a very important thing to recall and to remember. And just one little snapshot to remind you of its importance, where we focus on it, is every time we say Birchas HaMazon. And we've explained that we say in the benching, right, we say V'chalta V'savata V'erachta, the Pasuk says, that's where the mitzvah comes from. You should eat, you're satisfied, and you bless Hashem Elokecha al ha'aretz ha'tayva asher nasamach, on the good land that He gave you. So the Zohar asks the question, so that means that benching is a mitzvah tliya ba'aretz? You only thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael? You only bench in Eretz Yisrael? No. How do we interpret it? We interpret it as, when we bench, we thank Hashem for the food, and we thank Hashem for Eretz Yisrael, and we thank Hashem for Yerushalayim. Those are the three brachos de'oraisa, the three Torah-mandated brachos of benching. So if that's the case, why? Why? I mean, when you're benching, so, you know, rub-a-dub-a-dub, thanks for the grub, right? You know, you thank Hashem for the food. What are you thanking Him for the Aretz? What are you thanking Him for the Beis HaMikdash? You know, it's what's this got to do with this being here? So the Zohar says, because you have to understand that the mazon, the food which you and I have, wherever it is that we have it, it has to come ilamala. It comes from above. And what's the channel that it comes from above through? It comes to Eretz Yisrael, through the Beis HaMikdash, and from there it radiates outward to everywhere else in the world. That's what it says in Sforim. That's why it says about Eretz Yisrael, Leisech Sar Kol Ba, Eretz Yisrael is lacking nothing. Why? It has to be lacking nothing. Because if Eretz Yisrael is the channel through which all blessing comes everywhere in the world, then that means that it has to have a little bit of everything. If it's missing it, then obviously that blessing has skipped Eretz Yisrael, and if it skips Eretz Yisrael, it can't come anywhere else. Because Eretz Yisrael is the Shar HaShamayim. The Beis HaMikdash is the gateway to heaven. It's the point of connection between the Olam HaTachtayin and the Olam HaElyon, between the lower world and the upper world as it comes from Hashem. So says the Maharal, so this description of the tremendous prosperity that Esav has is going to be described as coming through this channel, coming from above. However, the thing is like this. So the thing is like this. So we see here this idea that each one indeed comes, and it comes through this flow. However, the Gemara's question is, Hanu Leman. The Gemara says, but who does it go to? What's the question, Hanu Leman? So, on two levels, we understand the question. The first level of the question is that, you know, like if Esav is this hopelessly earthy being, so why should Hashem give them all this stuff? Why should Hashem give them all this stuff? And in a broader sense, we're speaking about something here which comes, as we just saw, through three worlds, through the upper world, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if it's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then how could it indeed be just ending up at Esav, who is so removed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? To which the Gemara answers, no, you're right. It's going through Esav, and it's ultimately coming to him as a channel through which it will arrive in your hands. It will ultimately end up to you and to your friends and to your peers, those who are involved in the study of Torah. Okay, so that's shorthand. Let's now look at this a little bit more closely, both in terms of the Esav and Yaakov, both in terms of this original formulation of the Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, and in terms of the Hanu Leman, and in terms of the ultimate destination of all of this stuff. Esav and Yaakov both received brachos of material prosperity. They received them, in fact, maybe a few minutes apart. Right? Yaakov went in, portraying himself as if he was Esav, pretending, masquerading as Esav, and as such he got the brachos of Yitein Lecho Elokim, Itala Shamayim Mishmanei Oretz, the dew of the heavens, the fat of the land. The material brachos. If you remember, we talked a few weeks ago about these things. But the idea was that this bracha was the material bracha. It was the material bracha. That was why Yitzchak was not planning to give it to Yaakov. Maybe Yitzchak knew about Yaakov and wasn't planning to give Esav the spiritual brachas. In fact, it's much later in the story, in the parsha, when Yaakov is going off and Yitzchak calls him in, knowing that he's Yaakov, that he says, I'm giving you the brachas of Avram, I'm giving you the brachas of Eretz Yisrael. But here, where he thinks he's speaking to Esav, he doesn't mention anything about the spiritual brachas of Eretz Yisrael and Birchas Avraham. Here he gives them the material brachas, which he didn't think that Yaakov was a candidate for, because Yaakov's a ben Olam Haba. Yaakov's portion is the Olam Haba section. Esav's Olam Hazeh, so he figured he would give that to him. But Rivka didn't want to see to it at all, because she saw Esav as being so removed that she knew that for him to get any such thing of full control would be a disaster. But these were the brachas of Olam Hazeh. Yaakov leaves. Esav comes in, all excited. He brought his game. He brought the deer that he had hunted, and he wants to give it to his father. And he's immediately disappointed, because Yitzchak says, whoa, one second, I ate already. Right? And they discover that Yaakov had come in first. So Esav says, oh, you have to give me a bracha. So he says, what am I going to give you? I already made him your master. I already said Havegevir Lachecha, you know. So as Rashi says, anything I give you is really going to be his. Okay, Hanu Leman. Who is this all going to go to? Everything I gave to you is already his. So he says, no. You still must have something left. You still must have something left for me. Halayatalteli Baracha. So Yitzchak says to Esav again. Well, I'm sorry. First he said he took your bracha. He says, you must have something left. He says, I already made him your master. What can I do for you? So he says, you only have one bracha. Give me a bracha. And he started crying. And Yitzchak says, Hine. Mishmane aretz yemay shavechal mital shamayim me'ol. From the fat of the land shall be your dwelling place, and from the dew of the heavens above. In other words, he gave him as well material brachas. He gave him as well material brachas. Very similar to the brachas which he had given to Yaakov Avinu, Mital HaShemayim u'mishmane ha'aretz. What's the difference between the brachos which were given to the two of them? What's the difference between them? So if you notice, there are two significant differences between what Yaakov was told and what Esav was told. One difference is that when Yaakov was told it, he was told, V'yiteng l'cho ha'eloi kim, God should give you. When Esav was told it, Yitzchak just said to him, Mishmane yoretz yeh ma'yishavecho mital shemayim eol. Doesn't say Hashem will give it to you. He just gives it to him. The second thing is, also very small, quote unquote, subtle, but very noticeable. Yaakov got mital shemayim u'mishmane ha'oretz. What did Esav get? Mishmane ha'aretz u'mital ha'shamayim. It's the same thing, however, in the reverse order. In the reverse order. By Yaakov, it starts with the tal ha'shamayim, the dew of the heavens. By Esav, it starts with the fat of the land. What's the difference? What's the implication of this difference? So, Mefarshim stand on this. That indeed, in Yaakov's world, the bracha which he was to receive, it was to be received connected to Hashem Yisbarach. It was to be received as a shefa, as a flow which comes from above down here. But in Esav's world, Esav's bracha, Esav denies the presence of Hashem. That's part of Esav, right? He's kaifer beikar. And therefore in Esav, his earthy blessings are earthy blessings, with their roots as earthy blessings, without a strong channel or pipeline from above, certainly not an acknowledged pipeline from above. It's from the land. It's part of the land. That's what it is. Now, the truth is that we find this indicated within the story of the brachas itself. First of all, when Yitzchak spoke to Esav, he said, I want to go and bless you, Avarecha Nafshi, right? Bavur Tvarachani Nafshecha, nor my soul will bless you. When Rivka calls in Yitzchak, when Rivka calls in Yaakov, so what happens? What does she say to him? She said, you know, your father's going to give a bracha lifnei Hashem. Yitzchak had never used that terminology. But she said to him, he's going to give a bracha lifnei Hashem. Right, so the Rishonim speak about it. What exactly it means, lifnei Hashem. Hashem will agree with it. But she's emphasizing what is music to Yaakov's ears. What is very, very important to Yaakov, lifnei Hashem. And in fact, it's only in the bracha, when it comes out to Yaakov, that it includes ha'elokim. Now, remember one more thing, just to add to this mix. Hakol kol Yaakov ayodayim yedei Esav. Yitzchak gets thrown off because he says, the voice is the voice of Yaakov. What did he mean when he said the voice is the voice of Yaakov? So, right, normally you and I, we would translate it, and it's certainly part of Pshutai. You know, Esav was this, you know, this he-man hunter, right? So he would talk like this, you know, and Yaakov Avinu was, you know, he's the Eshev Olam, he had a nice, sweet, you know, he was the tenor to Esav's baritone, you know, whatever it was, you know, So Akoko Yaakov, you know, it doesn't sound like Esav to me. On the other hand, Rashi says two different things. Two different things. One thing he says is that Esav speaks without respect. When Esav came in, he said, "Father, eat from what I brought you." When Yaakov came, he said, "Father, would you please get up and enjoy, you know, eat from that which I have given you?" So he speaks with Derech Eretz. When Yaakov came in and he spoke to Yitzchok with Derech Eretz, it couldn't be, he wasn't able to disguise himself that way. He couldn't speak gruff. He could wear Esav's clothes, he could put on hairy goat skins, as gross as that sounds, as much as he wants, but to change it, but to start speaking like Esav, he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. Hakol kol Yaakov. And therefore, so the first thing was he didn't speak nicely, but there was another thing which threw him off, says Rashi. And that was when Yitzchok said, "Wow, how did you get here so fast? How did you get back so fast?" So what answer would you expect to hear from Esav? Well, Yitzchok was blind. He wouldn't be able to see it, but he would expect Esav, you know, blowing off the tip of his gun and saying, "What are you talking about? I'm the fastest shot in the West." Right? Instead, what did he hear? "Kikra Hashem elikecha lefanai." Right? Because Hashem helped me. Esav doesn't speak that way. Esav doesn't see the blessings which he has as coming through the Siyata Deshmaya. What's going on over here? And the truth is, one can argue, that when Yaakov spoke that way, and he described the brachos which he already had, the brachos of Tzayid, or the perceived, and again, whatever it was, of being able to bring this, as coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then, you know, Yitzchak's comment is, "Re'ei re'ach b'ni k're'ach sada asher berachai Hashem." I see you're carrying with you the scent of the field that Hashem has already blessed you with. Remember again what Rashi says there, that it smelled like the fields of Gan Eden. Smelled like the chakal tapuchin, like a stay tapuchim, like an apple orchard. Right? It smelled, like we say in the Zmiras of Shabbos, right? Chakal tapuchin kadishin, the holy apple orchard, that's Gan Eden. Right? That's the closest hint to the Eit Hadas being an apple tree, right? Short of King James. So the idea is that suddenly the whole bracha was taken from a bloody hunting field and Esav speaking in his material world to a loftier plane of Siyata Deshmaya of Gan Eden. And while Yitzhak may not have been exactly sure who it was that was standing in front of him, but he now delivered this bracha lifnei Hashem. And when Esav came in, and there's a thud back down to earth, because Esav bursts in and he smells like he always smells, right? Hunters, right? And what?
Like a locker room.
Yeah, like a locker room and like a slaughterhouse. A slaughterhouse makes a locker room smell like Gan Eden, right? And you know the smell of the field of the blood of the killing, right? And so on. And Esav comes in and he says, "Get up, pops. You know, I got some food for you." You know, so it's like, okay, now suddenly he's back down to earth. And instead of starting from the dew of the heavens, instead of Yitim Chel Akim, seeing it as a Shefa Milamala, it's all from down here. And that's really Esav's world. Because Esav's Zechus and Olam Hazeh, Esav's power in this world, is a world that exists with Hester upon it. A world where Hashem, in a certain sense, turns his face and he says, "Okay, may the strongest man win. Kol de olim gavar. May the strongest man win." As we've discussed and hinted to before, it's like the Kayin and Hevel dynamic all over again. Hevel's the shepherd, Yaakov is the shepherd, right? Kayin is the man of the fields, and Esav is the man of the fields. Hevel brings Hashem down with his karbonis. Right, Hevel brings Hashem down with his garbage. Kayin, right? He's busy saying, "Oh Hashem, I know you have no, you know, I'll get rid of Hevel, then Hashem won't be down here. Where's my brother? I don't know." You know, like Hashem doesn't know what's going on down here. He's trying to remove Hashem from this world so he'll be able to do his thing. And Esav is the same way. So in a certain sense, yes, the tremendous material success of Esav is well known and well documented. When you start expressing it and say that this material success is Eilam HaElyon to Eilam HaTachtayim, it's streets and buildings and skyscrapers, and it's resembling this whole Shefa, this flow from above, that as disguised as it might be, but there is a divine flow involved in all of this. Now, this is a different take on what's happening to Esav. It's not just, okay, the cat's away, you know, the mice may play. This is the time when Yaakov is down because they've separated from Hashem, so now Esav is able to take over. There's something that is being given. Umazu, don't you realize this nation, himlichu min hashamayim, right? They have given it their position from above. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? As much as Esav seems to just be this earthy control, but in a certain sense, this Gemara, as in other places, has said Esav has been blessed from the heavens with the kingdom. That's what they told Rabbi Akiva, right, when they warned him, right, about teaching Torah Barabim, right? Why are you starting up with this kingdom? Don't you realize that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has empowered them? There is something which has been given here to Esav that's above and beyond. And the Gemara says, yes, they've gotten it, and they've not gotten it of their own accord. They've gotten it because everything that they have, everything that they built, is going to end up very, very much in your hands. And let's look again a little bit at the parsha of Yaakov and Esav, and then let's look at more of what Chazal have to tell us about this.
Is that the reason why Esav gets a bracha? Because, I mean, he's not worthy of a bracha on the face of it. Why do you have to give him a bracha? Say you're nice for it. Goodbye.
Well, on one count, you cannot discount Yitzchak's original connection to Esav, his Ava for Esav, and his vision of what Esav would be able to be. He was hopeful about what Esav was going to be able to be. And the bracha is going to express his hope. So what's that mean? That when Yaakov is down, then you're going to be strong. Well, Esav indeed is going to play a role, a very, very significant role in history as a result of these brachas which Yitzchak gives him. And it's not a conventional role, it's not a usual role. But let's take a moment, again, to look at these brachas, to look at this situation in order to be able to see and to be able to understand. We know that Yaakov sent major, major gifts to Esav, and he bowed down before Esav. You know, subordinated himself significantly to Esav on so many ways, in so many ways, on so many fronts. That happens, however, on one level, on one playing field, between Yaakov and Esav themselves. However, there are two places that we have to call to our attention where we see things happening differently. One is that before Yaakov meets Esav, on his way to meet Esav, when he's already sent his gifts ahead of him, he has another meeting. And that meeting is with Sarei Shel Esav. We talked about this, right? With the angel of Esav. With the angel of Esav, you have the inverse of the story of Yaakov and Esav himself. Whereas in the story of Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov is bowing down to Esav, completely humbling himself. In the story of Yaakov and the angel, Yaakov fights and Yaakov wins. And the angel is humbled before Yaakov. And the angel has to ask permission of Yaakov to leave. Whereas on the other hand, when Esav and Yaakov are together, Esav says, I'm coming with you. And Yaakov has to weasel out of it so that he's going to be able to leave Esav. And what does Yaakov even say to the angel? He says, I'm not going to let you leave until you give me a bracha. And what did Yaakov say to Esav when he met him live? He says, you take my bracha. Kach na'as birchasi asher hu vaslach. There's a role reversal. In the physical world of Yaakov, Yaakov who's humbled, Yaakov who's on the run himself, so he bows down to Esav. Esav is on top of him. Esav is the master over his younger brother. But in Yaakov's spiritual world, he understands that Esav is completely humble to him. And he has to give him brachas. Everything which he has to give over to Yaakov. That's number one, sort of, you know, in the spiritual world. So say, okay, fine, but again, what does that have to do with the material world? But it finds its expression in the material world. In two Einiklach, in Antoninus and Rebbe, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah know, it speaks, we know that Antoninus was a grandson of Esav, Marcus Aurelius, and Rebbe was a grandson, Rebbe who's the personality, by the way, here in this Gemara, who says for you and for your friends and for your friends' friends, right? Rebbe was a grandson of Yaakov Avinu, and in fact, Rashi says in Chumash, quotes the Gemara, Shnei Goyim Bevitneich refers to Antoninus and Rebbe, who were two very, very great, wealthy people. Except Antoninus and Rebbe had a very interesting relationship. Unlike Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov could not get away from Esav quickly enough, and Esav had nothing, no interest at all in Yaakov's spiritual world, Antoninus and Rebbe was very much the opposite of that. Antoninus wanted to learn from Rebbe. He wanted to learn from Rebbe so badly that he built a tunnel between his house and Rebbe's house. And he would want to travel to Rebbe's house to learn Mechavrusa, but if the Romans would find out about it, they wouldn't be too happy with him. So he would travel there subtly. There's only one problem. A king always has to travel with somebody. So he would have a guard travel with him, but then he had to kill him. So every day when he would go to learn with Rebbe, he would kill two guards. The guard who took him and the guard who brought him back. Right? So he really, I mean, you know, this is, if you're Esav and you really want to learn Bechavrusa, that's what you do. You know, this is the way it works. And he goes and he learns with Rebbe. And he learns with Rebbe and he literally lies down on the ground to be a footstool so that Rebbe can step on him to get up onto his bed. Even Rebbe was uncomfortable to some degree with it, the Gemara says. And what did he used to do? Says the Gemara, Kol yuma havishadar leidava pricha b'matrasa v'chiti apumayu. Every day he would send him gold flakes. He would send him pieces of gold. And he would send them in a basket with wheat on top of it. Right? So that they say, okay, they're sending wheat to him. But he was really sending him gold. He was slowly but surely diverting the wealth of Rome to Rebbe. Esav sending gifts to Yaakov instead of Yaakov sending gifts to Esav. In the point of the ultimate point, the point of realization, that's the way things reverse. Hanu Laman. When Esav recognized it, Antoninus was an exception in this world of Esav who recognized Yaakov, who recognized the strength of Yaakov, who recognized the spirituality of Yaakov, who recognized the purpose of that which it was all about, and he said, if that's the case, all of my brachas should go to him. It's well known that what several Mefarshim say, it's I think most well known from the Malbim, that when Yitzchak wanted to give the brachas to Esav, it wasn't that he wanted to somehow give the world away to Esav, but he said, Esav will be the Zevulun to Yaakov's Yisachar. Esav's very, very keen on the material world. Yaakov is not. But Lamaisa, he lives in the material world. He needs to be supported in the material world. So let Esav, so to speak, get his hands dirty and provide the material support for Yaakov Avinu's spiritual quest. Not that Esav will just be a matter of the physical world and robbing Yaakov of it, but he'll be supporting Yaakov with it. That was the way Yitzchak perceived the way things ought to be. Rivka knew that Esav was completely removed. To that extent, Yitzchak was blind. He knew Esav was material and Yaakov was spiritual. But he thought that Esav would have at least a pintalayid. But Rivka knew that Esav didn't have a pintalayid. That Esav was Yisrael Mumar, that he was out of it. Right? And therefore, he would not be able to be in any which way supportive. And therefore she did not want him to have it. When Yitzchak saw that indeed it was taken away from him, he nevertheless gave it to Esav. He gave something to Esav. Not when Yaakov is strong, Yaakov will have it himself. But when Yaakov is weak, Esav will have strength. Now what's going to be with that strength? If it's going to be the way Yitzchak just simply said it, do of the heavens, fat of the land, do of the heavens, no connection to Hashem. Okay, no, so he has it, and he'll have it, and he'll use it. However, the way the Tanoim presented it, it was part of this upper world. It was part of the Shefa from above. It wasn't not coming through Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't not coming through Hashem Yisbarach. It was all part of the thing. It was Min HaShamayim Im Lichu. If they're giving it to him from the Shamayim, and it's not just a material, mundane bracha, so it still has to have a connection to Yaakov. It can't just be, okay, in the absence of Yaakov, separate from Yaakov. it still has to be something drawing on the strength of Yaakov. So what's going on over here? And the answer is that Esav's going to end up supporting Yaakov. Maybe it'll be in the rare occasion, like in Antoninus, voluntarily, he'll be the Zevulun to Yaakov's Yisachar. Or maybe it'll be, whether he realizes it or not, whether he likes it or not. And here, let's go to a Gemara, which it just so happens that I talked about yesterday morning, Shabbos morning, for those of you who were here. But it's a Gemara which is very fundamental. Very fundamental. Two Gemaras. One Gemara which is directly like Lag BaOmer, and the other Gemara which is very related to that Gemara, and both very related to our sugya. The Gemara says the story about how Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai went into Golos. How did he go into Golos? Because he was sitting around a table with Rabbi Yehuda and with Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Yehuda said, the Romans, they make such nice things, nice marketplaces, nice bathhouses, nice bridges. Look at the great infrastructure they've created that we can benefit from. And Rav Yossi did not respond. He did not want to compliment them. He did not want to insult them. Rav Shimon bar Yochai responded with punch. And he said, what are you talking about? When they built roads, marketplaces, they built them to build so that they could have places for their prostitutes to hang out, for red light districts. When they built bathhouses, it was because they just wanted to pamper themselves and indulge their physicality. When they built bridges, they built bridges for easy pass. Right? They built bridges so that they could just make money, right, hand over fist. They didn't do it for any other purpose, all self-centered. And the Gemara says, so when the government heard about this, they made Rabbi Yehuda into the chief rabbi, the Rav Mitam. They said, he speaks nicely about us. They sent Rabbi Yossi into exile, and they wanted to kill Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. That's how he ended up in the cave. That's the Gemara. So which is the accurate portrayal? So we have another Gemara. And that's a Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, Dav Beis, Amud Beis. The Gemara says that in the end of days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will call together everybody, and he's going to be cradling the Sefer Torah in his bosom, so to speak. And he's going to say, whoever was involved with the Torah should come and take his reward. So all the nations will gather, clamoring for reward, and Hashem will say, okay, let's go in order. And the Romans will get up first. And what are the Romans going to say? They're going to say, we built a lot of marketplaces. We made a lot of bathhouses. We built a lot of bridges. And you know why we made them all? We made them for all the Jewish people to be able to study Torah. We wanted to provide the material basis for the Jews to study Torah. To which the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will respond and he will say, Shaitim Sheba'olam, you fools. When you built roads, marketplaces, you built them for Zionists. When you build bathhouses, you build bathhouses for your own pleasure. When you build bridges, you build bridges in order to make money. Okay? So Rabbi Yehuda holds like the Romans, and Rav Shimon bar Yochai holds like the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. So listen to the Brisker Rav. Gevaldige, beautiful piece in the Brisker Rav. I think it's the first or second piece he has in the whole, in his small parish on Chumash, small sefer on Chumash, not parish on Chumash, sefer on Chumash. It says like this. You know what the Rebbeinu Shem called the Romans when they said that? He called the Romans idiots. He didn't call them liars. Why didn't he say you're a bunch of liars? You didn't do it for this. You did it for your selfish purposes. Shaitim Shalem, idiots? Says the Brisker Rav, because they weren't liars. It was true. It wasn't their intention. But now, with the benefit of La'asid Lavei, of the end of days, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu cradles the Torah in his arm and says, okay, you want eternity, eternity is all about this Torah. Suddenly the Romans will realize that while they had other intentions, they were actually playing a role in the support of Torah. That the roads that they built, and the infrastructure that they created, and the bridges and the bathhouses, Lamaisa, it helped. That indeed they were a zvulun involuntarily. they had been supporting the Torah, despite their attempts to erase and eradicate the Torah. There were certain things that they had done that had made things possible. Mm-hmm. Something which Rabbi Yehuda himself recognized. Rabbi Yehuda was not wrong. There's something that we're getting out of the Romans. They're trying to kill us, right? But there's something that we're getting out of them. You know, when they prayed Lishloim Shel Malchus, when they prayed for the local government, they did it in times of persecution and pogrom and everything else. But in a certain sense, they prayed for the government anyway, because Lamaisa, it kept certain things in place. Ilmole Meira, if not for the government, you know, who knows what would break loose. So therefore, they're saying, you know, now Rabbi Hashem, it's obvious and evident that we actually were playing a role in helping support the Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fools, you're not going to get rewarded for that. You're right, that's what you did. It's not a falsehood. It's true, that's what you did. It's true, now you can see that all the stadiums, right? What do Chazal say? All the stadiums that were Romans built will turn into houses of prayer and houses of study. But you're not going to get rewarded for that, because you did it for your selfish purposes. Yeah, the world revolves around Torah. Everything which will happen. Hanu Leman, who do they go to? Who do they go to? They'll go to the Bnei Yisrael. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to them. It's not that, okay, it's just happening by itself. There is a Shefa. There is a divine flow that makes them have it. There is a divine flow that will make them successful. But that divine flow is there, not so that it should end at Esav, because eventually it will all be turned over to Yaakov. The divine flow is because whatever it is that they build up, whatever it is that they made, is going to ultimately come and turn to belong to the Bnei Yisrael. This is the answer. So you can look at them and you can look at their motivations and you say, you're doomed, you're finished. On the other hand, there is an aspect of them which will ultimately be part of the picture, which will have kiyum. And maybe that's what Yitzchak was trying to give Esav here at that point in time. That he was giving him his place despite his lack of acknowledgement of Hashem Yisbarach, but there will be a place, you will have a place, you will actually end up playing a role, a supportive role, in what the Bnei Yisrael will ultimately be within this world. When he answered, I just want to just end with a couple of very quick things. First of all, by the way, you might remember the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva. We discussed it once with Rabbi Akiva and the Matron, when he met this beautiful, beautiful woman, right? And when she was trying to seduce him, right? And when he saw her, Rok Sachak Ubacha, right? He spit, he laughed, and he cried, right? So the Gemara says that so she didn't understand, right? And he blew the whole thing off. And the Gemara says, why did you do? Why did you do all of these things? So he spit because of the fact that she would end up with as being tipas rucha, and he laughed because he knew eventually that she would marry him, and that all the wealth she did, all the wealth that she had, that was one of the sources of the great wealth of Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara tells that story. In other words, she was going as a matron of Rome, trying to put down Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva knew, Hanhu Leman, who's this all going to end up going to? Sure, they're strong, but who's it all going to? Right, to him, it happened in a microcosm, right? It all was there. It all ended up going to him. It says in the Gemara, to you and to your friends and to your friends' friends. To you and to your friends and to your friends' friends. So I saw the Ben Yoyada says, what does it mean to your friends and to your friends' friends? So he says to you, Rashi says to all your fellow Talmidim. But, you know, why friends, 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 you know? So he says to you and to your friends, meaning to your Zavulans, to the people who enable you voluntarily, the Ashirim and so on, who enable you to be able to study Torah, and to Chavre Chavrach, and to the people who, the rest of the world, from whom the Ashirim build up their abilities to be able to give it to you. In other words, everyone who's going to be part of the picture, and everyone ultimately is part of the picture, whether they realize it or not, Right? It's all, you know, going to come back that way.
Yiddish Hashirim.
Hmm?
The Jewish Hashirim, you're saying.
The
Jewish Hashirim.
The Jewish Hashirim, yeah. But then there's a certain kalam, even those who sustain, who surround them, who hold them up, you know, willingly, presumably, because it comes back to them. And this, the last thing is that that he says, it brings the pasuk, it's not going to be theirs, it won't be stored, it won't be put in vaults. It's going to be given for those who sit before Hashem. Says the Gemara, what's that? Those are those who realize their friend's place in the yeshiva. Those who are makabel divrei chavira, the yeshiva. What's the idea? So the Maral says, because they're not learning by themselves. The person who's involved in building the world is involved in building the world b'chavrusa. The Gemara says, cherev al abadim. The person learns alone, cherev. It's a sword on there, right? Sounds like the sword of Esav. So destruction, emptiness. The idea in learning is we're supposed to build. We're supposed to learn with each other. We're supposed to build. We talked about it a little bit yesterday in the Shir on Pirkei Avos. We spoke about the Talmid Rabbi Akiva Shloinag, who kaved zel lazeh. Right? They were just being makabel from Rabbi Akiva for themselves. They didn't learn, interact with each other. The idea is that there is a building of this world. Right? If you're just going to imagine that you're going to get b'kain olam haba, you're just going to sit around HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then indeed, you know, you can do it on your own. You'll do it on your own. But the idea is that ultimately we're supposed to build this world. And Esek HaTorah, involvement in this world, is the ultimate Esek b'yeshuva shalom. It's the ultimate settlement of this world. But in order to do that, you have to do that with a society of learning, where you spread the learning, where you share the learning, where lilmeidu lalame, you're constantly learning and teaching together with each other. That's what he answers him. And he says, all of that material wealth of the physical world is going to go to those who are yoshvim lifnei Hashem, who establish, who know who their friends are, who know who their chabrusas are, who are building a society in a very different way than Esav is building the society. To them, those material blessings will accrue. Okay, like last week, we really only covered the first half of the perek, but the second half of the perek we're not going to, Yemir Tashem, talk about so much. We'll go on to the next one next time.